You are listening to Critical End, Episode 2.
This episode presented... Blah, blah, blah. So, okay, go again.
I like that. We should just go with that.
Yeah, this okay. is what happens when we rehearse something, see?
Critical End, Episode 2.
This episode presented to you in 3D. Oh. How amazing is that?
It's actually not possible.
We're coming out of the stereo and into your ears.
All right. Well, anyway, welcome to another episode of Critical End. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Logan.
And just to sort of recap, we are the two crazy guys who are sort of committed to seeing as many movies as possible. All movies, all time. We want to see every movie that's ever been made, which we won't do, but we're giving a shot.
And then we'll talk about them for your listening enjoyment in 3D.
Yes, in 3D.
Hey, did you listen to the last episode, Ryan?
No, I would never listen to this crazy
show. Me neither,
show.
Wow.
It's pretty stupid. Ugh. But I will say that the last episode, you know, was our big year-end, you know, 2008 wrap-up episode where we talk about all the movies that we liked in 2008 and didn't like.
It was spectacular.
It was. And this is more of a normal episode. This episode will be more like what you'll normally hear. We talk about one, maybe two movies, a couple little things in the middle, maybe some news, but not the gargantuan undertaking that the last one was, necessarily.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's, man, well, I saw every movie from 1948.
Well, I don't know why you would do that.
Preparation.
It seems actually, that would be a good show.
That would be. Write that down.
All right, I'll see them, and then we'll do it next week.
Okay, awesome.
Would you want to talk about what we're doing this week?
This week, we have sort of a horror fest double feature for you.
An old school double feature complete with a 3D movie.
That's right. We didn't actually see them as a double feature. That would have been cool. But theaters don't do that anymore, though. We'll start off with The Unborn.
Oh.
The Unborn.
I'm scared already.
And then My Bloody Valentine 3D.
That's right. Now, I really wanted to see The Unborn specifically because of David S. Goyer. He wrote and directed it.
And who's he exactly, Ryan?
Well, he's the guy who wrote...
I have no clue.
I am just hearing about this now. he wrote and... he co-wrote the Batman Begins and The Dark Knight with Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. So I liked those movies, of course. I talked about The Dark Knight last episode. And he wrote the Blade movies, some of which are pretty good, you know. And he wrote a bunch of other random stuff that I've liked in the past. So I thought, okay, this will be pretty good. And also, you know, if I was on the fence, well, Gary Oldman's in it. How could you go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. As a rabbi.
As a rabbi, yes.
I signed up just reading the credits.
Doing like a Chicago-y accent, too.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, so it worked out. Most of that movie was filmed in Chicago, by the way. Which is where I am, by the way. That's why it's an interesting bit of trivia just for me.
I was like, what's so great about Chicago?
No, nothing at all.
Was it a John Hughes movie, too?
It was. It's actually a heartwarming Christmas tale about ghosts. But the thing is that the trailer made it out to be, you know, your standard scary kid movie. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, maybe Goyer can take the scary kid movie back. Maybe he can make something out of this. You want me to jump into what I thought, or what did you think?
Well, I'll just go ahead and say this and get this out of the way, because I'm sure this statement might anger you in some way. You're talking about what else he's done.
You mainly, son of a bitch.
Mainly, Ryan, you ignorant slut. The Dark Knight, right? Dark Knight, huge movie. Yeah, you're right. We talked about it last podcast. Mm-hmm. But if you see The Unborn and you realize that it does, in fact, highly suck, I think you can blame The Dark Knight for that.
Really?
Because this movie would have never gotten made if The Dark Knight wouldn't have been huge. Because you take the guy who wrote The Dark Knight, he walks into a studio, he goes to some producer...
Hi, he might say.
He walks into a bar, get this, this is great. he walks in, you know, he goes up to some producer, and he's like, I'm the guy who wrote The Dark Knight, I wrote this script here, and they're like, sold. It doesn't matter what it is, this movie was going to get made, because it was this follow-up to The Dark Knight, just so they can say, you know, from one of the writers of The Dark Knight.
It's possible, I mean, you know, he had a... It's not like he didn't have a career before The Dark Knight.
It's true, but, I mean, this is, like I just said, this movie's coming right after The Dark Knight.
Right.
And, you know, everyone wants a release of the movie that written by the guy who wrote The Dark Knight right after The Dark Knight came out.
Right.
Which just turned out to be The Unborn, which was pretty bad. Ryan, thoughts?
The opening is a, is this, she, this woman jogging in the park, and she comes across this dog with a, like, sort of tardy French masquerade mask with like lipstick on it, and that it's meant to be a very tense moment, but it's a dog with lipstick on it, and I was thinking, all right, this is, you gotta really have a lot of art cred to pull this off as scary and not just silly.
Exactly.
So I'm waiting and I'm thinking, oh boy, I hope this lives up to it, because this is really gonna be hard and I'm not scared yet. And of course ends up being a dream sequence, but it's still sort of like, well, that was more silly than scary, but all right, I'm still on board, David Esquire, here we go. And it just ends up being the most cliche, awful, sort of straightforward horror film that you would expect, except that the dialogue is flat out terrible. Yes. It's just especially terrible, and it's especially bad with the younger characters. Goyer's trying to write how the kids talk, so they all sort of like call each other sluts and like you know, call each other retarded, and it's trying to be, you know, this is how the average teen would talk. But it really comes off as stilted and uninformed and just sort of embarrassing. And you know, the scary stuff is just by the book. It's like there are, you know, the creatures in the mirror, the creatures right behind you, you know, the creatures down a scary hallway. It's like, it's just really rote, you know?
Well, the sad thing is, this movie wasn't advertised like that at all. And it really kind of tricks you, because, I mean, you know, we both, well, I guess you more so for David Esquire, but I want to see it based on the ads, which it looks completely original for the most part. It looks like, you know, based on the ads, I was like, okay, he's ripping off some Asian, there's some Asian influence here as far as horror movie goes.
There actually was an Asian movie called Unborn. Not,
yes.
Not really the same, but...
Which, actually, yeah, because I thought it was a remake at first, which it wasn't. You know, based on the ads, I thought this looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. You get in there, and Ryan, you're right. It falls apart so quickly. The only good thing I can say about this movie, and we'll get to, I guess, ratings in a little bit, was I thought there was some interesting visual things. Yeah, you mentioned, like, the dog wearing the mask as being, you're right, there's some art cred to pull off there. Mm-hmm. But I think that's sort of what he's going for, is, like, an image you've never seen before, which is where I'm pulling, you know, the Asian horror movie thing from. And it that kind of worked for me at first, and I think it's shot really well. This, I don't know, something about snow always sells me on scenes really well. But you're right, no one can act in this movie, and I don't know if it's his fault so much as, besides Gary Oldman, none of these people have really shown us they can act before. I know you like Cloverfield, but I mean, one of the reasons that movie didn't work is because it was supposed to be like this real life experience, and all the actors are terrible in it. And this girl just, I forget, Odette something, is that her name?
I don't know.
Who was also, yeah, who's the main female lead in The Unborn. She's absolutely terrible. You're talking about cliches. Here, Ryan, here is the first, I'd say first 30 minutes of the movie works like this, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Something scary happens, she walks around in her underwear. Something scary happens, she takes a shower. Something scary happens, she has sex, then walks around in her underwear. That really is like, seriously, folks, if you go see this movie, keep that in mind, and you will realize that's exactly the first act of the entire movie.
Now, the problem is that he's getting his conventions mixed up. If he was making a gore movie, that would be what I would want from the film. But this is supposed to be a psychological horror movie.
Right, exactly. And And the other, I don't know, I was just confused about everything. There's so many, I just gave it points for its visual images, but none of those really pay off. We don't quite know what any of them really mean in the end.
Right, the upside-down heads are the name of the game, and there's never an explanation as to why that's the case. There's a dog with an upside-down head, there's a creepy, crawly old man with an upside-down head, which, by the way, the effects, not that great. It wasn't that convincing for me.
No. The movie overall is not that great. But also, who gives their unborn kids nicknames, first of all?
Oh, my parents did.
Oh, did they really?
You want to know what mine was? Elmo.
Yes. Is this true?
Yeah, do you want to know what my sister's was?
No.
Elmo, too.
But, okay, gotcha. creative people, those parents of yours, Ryan.
Well.
I was about to just go launch into this whole thing about no one nicknames their unborn kids, and then no people who do don't nickname them Jumbie. But,
Totally possible.
I guess, yeah, it's possible now since yours were Elmo, so I'll leave that out of my complaints.
You know, the whole Jumbie wants to be born thing, it's just, it's the same thing I feel about the opening dog lipstick scene. It's like, that's pretty damn silly. You've got to already have built up enough cred for me to take that seriously, and you just didn't.
You know, yeah, he could have picked a less goofy name.
Exactly.
It just, and then it's also, the worst horror movies are the ones that just, they're always the supernatural ones. They'll run along pretty well, and then all of a sudden they'll get to this point where they just give up, and they just start making up rules about how ghosts and demons and things like that work. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this movie started doing, but they did it from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, she comes across this old lady who tells her more about what's going on, and the lady just completely pulls all this stuff out of nowhere. She's like, wind chimes tell you if ghosts are near. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, hold on, no one's ever, it'd be different if I had ever heard this before in my entire life. But, you know, if I hang, a wind chime up in my room and it starts moving around, the first thing I think is that there's a draft in the room, not that there's a ghost near or anything like that.
Yeah, she should have been more specific. She's like, look, it might also be a draft, so you just want to double check, but really it could be a ghost. The thing is, I don't mind so much if a movie makes up its own rules as long as it's for a reason. You know, she lists off all these rules, and then you see her, ghost-proof her house. Like, okay, that might be the most logical choice, but it's not an interesting choice for the movie, because she just stays in her house doing nothing for, 5 minutes. And then she immediately gets a phone call to run away and do something else. So, the fact that she ghost-proofed her house doesn't play in anything, and that's sort of wasted screen time. But, there was the wind chimes, which never really played into it. They went off a little bit. The mirrors, which is for one scare and never actually plays into the plot. The ghost never uses that as a doorway or anything.
I like how, she's told to get rid of every mirror in her house, and they cut to her just shattering them all, destroying every single one, and then burying them outside, and that's when you start to wonder where her parents were at that point.
Her mother's dead and her dad's out of town, even though we don't get to see that scene at all. It's just like, my dad's out of town.
Yeah, okay, that leads into another question I had, and this is, a lot of, these might sound like minor complaints, but this is, why the whole movie was just so goofy after, and I found myself riffing on it. About how when I realized it was halfway through that it was really bad, I just kind of gave up at that point. But is she in college or in high school? I was so confused about that.
I really they don't know.
They show her, they cut to her first hanging out with her friends on what looks like a college campus. She's in a huge stadium classroom, yet she refers to her who I thought was her professor, as Mr. So-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then both her and her friend live at their parents' houses.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be high school, but she looks like she's about 30.
Yeah, so I guess that's standard for horror movies from the 80s.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So final verdict on Unborn, Ryan, do you have anything else here that we need to cover? I feel disgusted, to be honest.
You feel dirty?
I do. I feel very dirty.
It is. You feel dirty because it's sort of just manipulative. It's like, we did nothing original. We did everything by the book. Come on in and, like our movie. There's no reason to, but we're asking you to do this anyway.
You're right. We expected more from this guy, too.
Yeah. I will say that Gary Oldman is good, of course. He's good in everything. He's not given anything to work with. And, in fact, his character is very unimportant. I do like how they didn't even feel it necessary to, invest enough into the exorcism scene to give any of the characters' names. So the Gary Oldman comes in, and he's like, he's got the one guy, he's like, this is my best friend in the world, this Episcopal, priest or whatever, Mr. Blah, 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 Reverend Blah, blah, Father Blah, blah. And these people are volunteers. Now,
there was no reason for any of that besides except, just to put some more bodies in there to get thrown around. Yeah, and you're right. I'd forgotten about the whole exorcism thing in this. And this movie really does play across like a Jewish version of The Exorcist, which is the last thing I expected going, because they don't advertise any of that. And I don't know if in the advertising they're trying not to give anything away or they just don't want to show you how stupid this movie is going to be.
But here's the thing, it's unclear until the end, big end reveal, which of course I saw coming. I won't give away. But it's they really telegraph it. But it's unclear as to the end, until the end why she would need an exorcist. This thing, it's not really in her yet. Isn't that the point?
Exactly. Right. Right. I think there's the pivotal scene in the middle of the second act for me was a slight spoiler here when they're like, yes, it's all because of Nazis. And I was kind of okay, movie.
Yeah, that's just yeah.
That's the only spoiler I'll give, because I do want to cover the ending really quick, Ryan, before we jump into our ratings of this. Mm-hmm. But the end, did you feel like it was totally tacked on in post? Because it was made up of scenes we saw earlier with a voiceover and nothing new.
The reveal is to the...
I guess I'd call it a twist, but most of the time twists don't last 30 seconds, you know, and pop up right before the end credits.
I don't know that it was tacked on, because I saw it coming based on the one scene that we saw that would have foreshadowed it.
Okay.
If that tells you anything.
But wasn't she, like, experiencing the visions and stuff before that scene had taken place?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that wasn't like, goal one, necessarily, with this demon. The demon seemed to want her, and then couldn't get her, and was like, well, plan B.
Okay.
Which doesn't, you're right, make a lot of sense, because the first big vision she sees foreshadows the real ending. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It's sort of a mess, and I wish we could say more about it, because we're not helping the listeners at all with this.
If anything, I'd rather ruin The Unborn and not My Bloody Valentine. But I'm all about reading. I always like reading reviews that don't have spoilers in them. So Unborn, my side, and I think this might be a rare instance for us, Ryan. I ended up giving it a 4.
Okay. This is a very rare instance for us.
Yes.
No, wait,
I lied about that. I ended up giving it a 3. Sorry, I'm actually flipping back through my rating right now.
Okay. I gave it a 2.
Yes.
Which almost never happens. I usually rate about 1 star higher than you in general.
And this is out of 10. And the way it usually works is it's actually reversed. Mm-hmm. And normally, I'd give a 2 and Ryan would give a 3.
Maybe I had more expectations and that's why. But like, I just thought, you know, this movie, it was one of those movies where it almost felt like I wasn't watching a movie. Like, it's like you're not giving me anything to work with. It's not that I'm unimpressed. It's that there's nothing here.
There was some straight to DVD. MTV made horror movie, and it was better than this one. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this movie should almost have been straight to DVD horror. It really does not belong in movie theaters, and it's really not good.
You know, horror movies just hinge on, you know, psychological ones are supposed to be better than this, but this one really just mm-hmm. wasn't. But horror movies hinge on a gimmick. You know, it's really just going to be a series of scares or a series of gory scenes, like one or the other or both. The thing that makes you stay is what is the gimmick for this movie. Oh, the gimmick is, you know, she's a killer who's in this house and, you know, was killed in a fire and whatever. There's a different twist for every horror movie. This one just didn't feel the need to have any kind of gimmick. I mean, it tries a little, but it just never catches on, and it just feels like, you know, it feels like a college film. It feels like somebody's, you know, crappy thesis film from art school.
That's right. You guys will find out soon that we tend to talk a long time about bad movies more so than the good ones.
Right.
I completely agree with you though about The Unborn.
Yes.
And that whole concept about how this type of movie should work and why this movie did not work.
Yes, indeed. Well, we've got a little special thing next here, Logan. As you know, we want to keep in touch with the people who listen to this podcast and who read our blog at critical-end.com. So we want to answer some questions from our listeners.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to do that now.
I was not aware. I was not aware that we have listeners, is what I'm saying.
Well, here's the thing. We're a new podcast. Actually, I'll go ahead and reveal that while we're recording this, we haven't released the first one yet.
That's why I haven't heard it.
Right. We're kind of backlogged. And because of that, we don't actually have any questions from users just yet. But that doesn't mean that we can't still answer questions. I just got some questions from someplace else.
Oh, okay. I guess that's legal in some way.
Yeah, no, these are fan questions. These are actually questions that I'm borrowing from the official Jonas Brothers website.
Oh, awesome!
Yes, so if you want to just answer these, and I'll kind of talk about it a little bit as well, but if you just want to answer these as we go along, I'm sure that it'll give us our listeners an opportunity to learn a little bit more about us.
Well, throw out a Jonas Brothers, I mean, fan question to me, Ryan.
Okay, question one. Do you ever miss your hometown and being able to go out in public without screaming fans following and attacking you? That's from Samantha.
Well, as a star of...
Samantha. There you go.
Was it Samantha? Samantha, can I call you Sammy? Thanks. Well, Sammy.
She prefers little Sammy.
Well, little Sammy. Being an audio star, you don't tend to get recognized so much.
Killed the audio star.
I know. That's a problem I see because, mm-hmm. you know, I go out and, like, the Jonas Brothers, everyone's like, oh, Jonas Brothers, we love you.
Why do you go out with the Jonas Brothers?
Well, they're nice guys. They invite me out. They drive.
Oh.
And I guess, you know, I don't get that kind of, like, fan attention until I open my mouth.
Right.
And that's when the loving starts pouring in.
What?
Wait, what were we talking about?
Okay, moving on. Do you guys have any pets? From Elise.
Ryan?
No.
Elise?
Oh, sorry. Elise, no.
Oh, whew. I lack no pets.
You have every pet?
I have every pet in the world, Elise.
Okay.
Elise, are you of age? I like to tell you a story.
Moving on.
Okay.
Hey, guys, just wondering, you did a concert in Puerto Rico. Did you like it there, and will you come back for another show? That's from Esther.
Well, Ryan, that live podcast we did in Puerto Rico, I didn't think went over so well.
It's true. We were only there because we were running from the American government at the time.
Well,
which is weird,
Esther,
because the American government is also in Puerto Rico.
Well, Esther, did we enjoy it? Was that her question?
Yeah, and will we come back to Puerto Rico to do another show there?
Start listening. Esther, we did not enjoy it because no one showed up, and we will not be coming back because you weren't there. If you knew about it, why weren't you there? Ryan, back me up here.
It's true. I don't remember Esther being there, and I feel like if it was so important for her that we come back, she would have made the first one.
Exactly. It was me, you, and that Pablo guy.
Yes.
Who paid me $5 to do that thing. Remember that?
Yeah. We're still not allowed to talk about that, though.
Oh, okay.
Just a few more here.
Okay.
I just wanted to know if you guys have ever gotten into a really big fight. I know that I do with my sister, Natalie.
Oh, Ryan, I'll let you take this one.
Well, I will say that we've gotten into a few scraps over the time. I mean, we usually agree on movies, but we both disagreed very strongly about a little movie I like to call C-Spot Run.
Yes.
Which Logan stands by, and which I unfortunately cannot.
Oh, we're giving a real answer to this one. Well, Sammy or Esther or whoever this last girl was.
Natalie.
Natalie, why are these all females, by the way? Don't we have any male fans?
I don't know what you're implying.
Okay. Well, Natalie. Okay, well, Nat.
She prefers Allie.
Well, Allie. Does it say that?
No.
Okay.
It's implied.
Well, Nat, Allie.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
I allow everyone one guilty pleasure movie. It's a movie you're allowed to like without any certain reason. You don't have to explain why you like it. It's mm-hmm. Everyone gets one, and for me that is C-Spot Run. What your guilty pleasure movie, Ryan? Possibly.
Do you have one in mind? I can't think
of
one.
Well, I'm sure I could if I looked through your DVD collection, I could see it or something like that. I guess I don't come down to you so hard as C-Spot Run, because I can imagine where the hatred for C-Spot Run would come from, mainly being the fact that it's C-Spot Run.
There are movies that I know are bad but still enjoy, but you actually think C-Spot Run is good, right? Isn't that the distinction?
Oh yeah, well no, it falls in the guilty pleasure where I can't really explain. I think it's good, but I can't really explain why I think.
But you don't
it's
enjoy
good.
It because it's bad, because that would be different.
Oh, no, not at all. No, there's movies I enjoy because they're bad, or stuff Killjoy or any of the Wishmaster movies,
sure.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we did have a big fight. We didn't talk for several months. You
are breaking the restraining order right now, Ryan.
Well, I feel like it's worth it to get the band back together.
Scoot the chair back a little bit.
Next question. Joe.
Okay.
Why do you wear a ring on your ring?
No, hold on. What, are you Joe or is that me?
This is
Ryan, no, this Jonas Brothers thing isn't going to work unless we put one of our names in there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You can't use the Jonas Brothers names. I'm sure that's illegal in some way.
Okay, let me try this again.
Okay, try again.
Ryan and or Logan.
Okay.
Why do you wear a ring on your ring finger on your left hand? That's from Emily.
Well, I think Joe should answer this one.
That's true. Is he with you or?
Wait, that. Well, what? Who's it? Who asked this one?
Emily.
Well, Emily, that is my promise ring. as I promised to, I'm. You can jump in at any time because.
No. It's Logan's promise ring. That's the answer to the question.
It's my promise to myself that I'll always wear a ring on that finger to keep pure.
It's your reminder to wear a ring on that finger.
It's my reminder to wear a ring on that finger. Now, what is yours for, Ryan?
Mine, Emily, is on my right hand. That answers that.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was mistaken there.
Oh, so she said left.
She said left hand. So.
Left hand. Wait, so I've been wearing that on my wedding finger.
Emily, a
no
true
wonder
fan.
Wonder girls don't talk to me at bars.
A true fan would know these things, and I'm afraid you're out of the club.
Oh, damn it.
The last one. When Frankie gets older, will he eventually join the band? And, of course, the answer to that is Frankie has his own band, Caitlin, called Drop Slap. So listen to that. Listen to that.
Drop Slap's pretty awesome,
right
though.
Away. It is. It's a good. We encourage you to go out and listen to that.
We should get Frankie to do our music for the podcast. Can you do our closing song?
You know what Frankie said to me the other day?
What? Relax.
That's exactly it.
Yes. Mm. Is that really where you were going with that
yep.
joke?
That's where I was going.
Okay. Let's move past this FAQ thing now.
All right. Clearly a success. And talk about My Bloody Valentine 3D.
which was also a success.
Yes. It's, you know, we both Logan and I sort of have a nostalgia. In fact, while I talk about this, I'm totally going to put on my 3D glasses from the movie.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, this is great.
I'll look at mine lovingly.
Okay. We have a nostalgia, Logan and I, for 3D movies, both, I would say, of the 50s and of the revival period in the 80s.
Yes.
The 80s, of course.
I'll take the 80s more, yeah.
Sure.
They're the forgotten ones.
It's true. They're the lost boys of the 3D scene. And the 80s ones were focused pretty largely on horror movies. There was Jaws 3D, mm-hmm. Friday the 13th 3D.
Uh-huh.
A lot of 3Ds in the title, so you knew what you were getting into.
They always worked it in as it was the third movie. It was
really
Jaws
lucky.
3. Mm-hmm. You have to pause, though, when you say it. It has to be Jaws 3D.
Right.
Friday the 13th Part 3D, which makes no sense now I think about it. There's also Amityville 3D, which was the second one. So I guess that kind of... so I guess that was Amityville 3D...
Amityville 2 colon 3D.
You got it. You didn't pause out. Amityville 2 3D. See.
So were there? What?
I think math got involved somewhere along the line. It was actually the fifth one.
Oh, okay. So there was Amityville, yes. Amityville 3A, 3D, uh-huh. C, and then 3D. So that would be five. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. So it's good to see with that in mind that they are coming back to some actual 3D. This is actually. Real D is the technology now that's prevalent, and My Bloody Valentine. Oh, sorry.
The Real D is only what they're using right now in cinemas. IMAX still uses a different form of 3D, and if you get a chance to see this movie in the IMAX, I know what you're thinking when I say it's like I'm not gonna pay the $13.50 or whatever to see this R-rated horror movie in the IMAX, but it'd be a lot more worth it because IMAX 3D is always 10 times better.
See,
it's a different technology, and it has nothing to do with the screen being bigger is why it looks cooler. It's a different technology where it actually does appear. It has more depth to it.
I'm going to disagree with you in 1 second, but I did want to tack on that this is the...
Well, that's like a proven fact, though, Ryan. I mean...
Hold on, no.
It's not, okay.
That the this is the first film to be shot fully in Real D, I believe. I'm not sure if Journey to the Center of the Earth was fully 3D or not, but it's definitely the first R-rated Real D movie.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Right. Yeah.
And to your point, though, I think that I like this technology better than the IMAX 3D. Because I was getting a lot less of that sort of like double visionness of it. Maybe it was just the glasses were better constructed than when my previous IMAX experience. But like, if I go to an IMAX 3D movie, I always sort of feel like I'm getting this sort of double vision-y thing where it doesn't always work, and I always feel like there's something on my lens or something, like I'm seeing it's all blurry, or it's like it's not in focus, it doesn't feel, you know, it feels distracting from the film.
Right. The problem with that is actually, I believe what's actually happening is that you're trying to take in too much. I think because the screen's actually so big, which is separate than the 3D technology that they're using, that might cause a double thing. Although I clearly know what you're talking about. Last one I saw was Polar Express in 3D in the IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
And there were scenes when I had that. I've also seen that in cinemas in 3D, and it's not as cool, to be honest with you.
Well, with the Real D, I felt
I
like
the Real D technology, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like, I did have some of that problem, but only when there was fast movement. When there was fast movement, I felt like it got blurry and confusing and sort
yes.
of, you know, but, when there wasn't, it was nice and even and sharp, and I actually forgot it was in 3D. I mean, it was impressive, but it wasn't distractingly in 3D.
Right.
I was able to enjoy the movie separate from the 3D, and I also like the 3D elements as well, because, you know, a talking scene between two people is not that interesting in 3D. So you're really just waiting for, like, the action stuff, because that's where the 3D shines.
Yes.
Anyway.
They did a good job, actually, of making this kind of a real movie, not just a big 3D gimmick.
I thought so, too.
Because there's probably only about four, maybe five, big 3D scenes as far as, like, you know, what you'd expect from a horror movie in this.
Right.
They don't throw stuff at... It's not like Friday the 13th Part 3, 3D, where, you know, they randomly, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to adjust my TV antenna for no reason right in front of the camera. The 3D works as a... It works in advantage of the movie. It helps it out a lot.
Right. My favorite example is if you ever go to Disney World and see Muppet Vision 3D, when Kermit comes out and he's like, I just want you guys to know that even though we're doing this in 3D, we won't be using any gratuitous 3D tricks. And then Fozzie runs out, did somebody say gratuitous 3D tricks? And starts peddling a ping pong ball into the audience. but, you know, it wasn't that. It was the stuff that was 3D seemed like it would have been in the movie anyway, even if they weren't shooting it in 3D.
Yes.
I will say that that resulted in probably fewer 3D scenes than I would have liked, because, I mean, I am paying for the 3D. I might as well, you know, get my money's worth. So, like, there were moments where I thought, well, if you shot that a little differently, it would have been a cool 3D effect, you know. But I think you're right. And I will actually say, though, there were a few problems with the way they shot it, because I feel like the director shot this movie like he would have shot any movie. It just so happened he was using a 3D camera. Now, that's, in one respect, very good, because he took it seriously.
Yes.
It's a real movie. The fact that it's in 3D is just an extra thing. And that means it also will still look good in 2D, which is important for DVD. But there were moments where the effect was sort of ruined. Like, this director, I don't know, I forget who it was now, but he tends to shoot...
Well, I know he's the same guy who brought us White Noise, too.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yes, which was, I think, believe before this, he's only done straight to DVD stuff.
Well, it's impressive for that level. I mean, you know...
But go ahead, I want to see where you're going with this.
Well, the only thing is, he tends to shoot people with the tops of their heads clipped off, and that's not, you know, not a lot, but that's a legit style. I've seen movies where, you know, all the close-ups have just, like, the just barely the top of somebody's head clipped off, right?
And I have to wonder if that's one of those things where it's kind of panned and scanned later on to get rid of the boom mic.
It's possible.
Bad directing, if that's the case.
That would mean that they shot, like, whatever it is, non-anamorphic, or they shot anamorphic, right. And I don't know, I forget the technical aspect. But anyway, my point being that he chose to frame the shots that way, which is totally fine, except that fucks up the 3D, because if you can't see the top of their head, it's obviously not coming out of the screen.
Yes.
Whereas if the camera was a little bit higher and their head, you could see all of their head, since they are being brought into the foreground, it would look like they were coming out of the screen. Now, maybe that was purposeful, maybe he didn't want to distract you with that at that moment, but it's like, well... This would, you know, it's already in 3D. It would look cooler if it looked realer, and all you have to do is bring the camera up a little bit.
Right.
And it's not just in close-ups. It's sort of long running shots and stuff were like that as well. But the stuff that was legit meant to be 3D, like, you know, shots of a gun pointing at you, or a pickaxe coming at you, were composed pretty well.
Okay. Well, the movie, to be honest, works for only two reasons. Since we're talking about the 3D now, I'll go ahead and say it. The gore in the 3D, mm-hmm. There's really not much else to this movie that would make it worth seeing.
Look, and you're forgetting the long, protracted nudity. That's definitely a selling point.
That wasn't so much a selling point, and I feel like that was only thrown in there because, like, this movie's in 3D, we need this, guys. Because that scene really could have been cut down a whole lot, because it really doesn't relate so much later on at all.
It's true. It's actually odd, because they didn't... I mean, if you're going to do that in 3D, they could have taken more advantage of it, actually, if you really are going to do that.
I think they were trying to do it somewhat tasteful, though, because, I mean...
Exactly. They went halfway with it, is what I'm saying.
Well,
it really would have... You're right. It would have made the movie... It would have brought the movie down if they did that, but...
Yes. Having seen the original... My Bloody Valentine. And once again, it's important to you know, to realize that, like, half of horror movies made now in Hollywood, actually probably more than that, I'll say 60, maybe 70% are all remakes. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what this is. I gave the original a 4. It's fun only in the Friday 13th 80s slasher type way, where you watch it more to see, you know, you're watching a bunch of, like, 35 to 40 year old people playing high school kids.
Right.
Getting drunk, and you really just, like, wait and see who ends up being the last person alive, because that's the person who probably did it.
No, I didn't see it. It was never shot in 3D, the original, right?
No, not at all.
And it was, based around a mine and all that?
Yes, it has a respectable following. It's considered, like, a horror movie. A lot of, I go to, like, a lot of these websites, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
I go to
yeah.
a lot of these websites, and I follow sort of, like, what, you know, the big trends are in horror movies, and that's one that people, like, say a lot of things about that. It's like, they think of it fondly. And so they were excited that this one of all movies is being remade in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, the minor outfit's brought over from the original. And it's really cool to have someone killing someone in that outfit.
Sort of organic from the character bad guy suit, yes.
Yes. But the original is really just like the first 10 minutes of this remake.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, it starts with this, you know, like a 10 years ago flashback. That was kind of like the entire first movie. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I got to sit through all this again. I know where this is going. But the remake really just jumps into it right away. And I did not see that coming. I did not expect it. Usually, you know, you wait around for these movies to build up. But mm-hmm. The action just starts right away. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sit through an hour of partying now.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work that way at all. And so I was instantly,
I was thankful
drawn in. Yeah, oh no, I was drawn into that. And I was really interested in the movie then.
You know, I mean, if they were really going to make those characters three-dimensional and make me care about them, I would have appreciated the backstory. I knew they weren't, so the fact that they got to the point was great.
Exactly, right, right. But these, if anything, it kind of helps the characters more. Because in the first one, I could not really tell the characters apart. I just knew they were all, you know, high school students and that they were going to die. In this one, I knew somehow, like, I knew the character relations. I knew how important it was that one character had been gone for 10 years. It works. The movie works really well also from a, it's one of those fun 80s, early 90s screamish slasher films where you spend a lot of time trying to guess who did it. And I haven't seen one of those in a long time that was really effective and actually worked.
Now, talking about who did it, I because I know you don't want me to, I will try not to reveal the ending at all, okay?
Okay,
so
yeah.
Let me try to tiptoe, but early on...
But in the end, here's what
happens. But what I'm saying is here's who did it. early on, I saw certain evidence, or I kind of got where this movie was going. And I said, okay, clearly so-and-so is the murderer, okay? I thought I knew. Then, the movie started giving me... Other characters in the movie started suspecting this person. And I thought, oh, well, if they all suspect him, then that's not where it's going to go. Because the movie has to have a twist, so they're going to take it the other way. So maybe I'm wrong. And I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. It's not the person I thought it was. Then it gets down to there's strong evidence for two people. And I was like, I have not seen a cheesy movie like this do that for a while, where I actually legitimately did not know who it was going to be. And I really, between the two of these characters, couldn't tell you who it was going to be. The problem was, though, as cool as that was, when it was revealed who it was who I always thought it was anyway, and I thought, well, I guess I was right, and that was just sort of a fake.
Well, I give the director some points for also throwing some subtle stuff that probably wasn't in the script. There's some red herrings, and just, I don't know if you picked up on something like this, Ryan, but just like the way a character holds a flashlight, or the way he, you know, he kind of like twirls it around, is a red herring, and it's like stuff like that is so effective. And just because you think you're picking up on something no one else in the audience is,
right?
And you think you know the ending because of that, and so it does keep you guessing. It kind of cheats in some ways, but
well, the thing is,
I'm not complaining about the ending. Not at all. I was really happy with it, actually.
The ending, yeah, I was more on this movie's side until the ending, the very ending, because this can sort of go back to.
It is completely different than the original, by the way.
Okay.
It's a remake. It has a completely different ending. That's something for the audience out there. It's like, I've seen this movie already.
The thing is that it reminded me of High Tension, that horror, the French horror movie that we talked about in our previous podcast. Because they do this twist, and it was a twist that I considered and thought they were going to do. And then, at least unlike High Tension, they go through extra pains to make sure that you understand why the twist makes sense. But I think it doesn't. The character who did it, you know, was would have had to gone through something complex to make it happen that I think would have left too much evidence that would have been pointing to him for it to actually work. I think that there were liberties taken and there was a little bit of cheating to make it so no one figured out that he did it earlier.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think there's like one scene where they kind of cheat you on it. But I'm giving them, I'm allowing them to do that because they didn't press on that so much, and it's really not an ending you want to just sit down and really like break apart.
That's true.
Because this isn't that kind of movie. This really is just like a good time movie.
And that is true.
They're
and
not
I,
trying to.
I did have a good time.
High Tension was French. It's supposed to be art. Okay, that it just sucked, is what it was. But this is not supposed to be art in any way. There's no French people involved that I know of, and it's just they're at the movie theater and they're throwing blood at the screen and. Because of that, it was a good time. It's not a perfect movie. I think a lot of the dialogue was delivered in a cheesy type way. And,
oh, sure.
We discussed this, Ryan. I think you're right in that some of it was maybe supposed to be that way. But other times it really seemed like, okay, that person just can't act.
Well, there's a nude scene that goes on, not a sex scene, but just a nude scene with a nude woman that goes on for like 10 minutes. And like one of the characters actually goes, put on some clothes. And I was like, all right, you're in on the joke, apparently.
By the way, that character was actually one of the writers. There you go.
Okay, see? So, I think they were in on that joke. I mean...
Yes.
It's sort of like, okay, it's a gore movie. You expect this. Here it is, you know.
But I think they pressed it slightly more, though. You're right, because it wasn't... they knew they were doing a 3D movie, and they wanted to do something like that and do it somewhat tasteful.
Yeah, actually, which, you know. It's more tasteful than I would have thought it would be, actually.
So, I'm going to bring this movie to a 6, actually.
I actually have to agree with you. I see, because I liked it less, I say it's a 6. Or whatever. Like,
after we explain to people how we usually would do ratings, we're completely, like, everything's the opposite in this.
And this is not on purpose. Like, we don't set out to do this, but it just ends up happening. Like, but the 6 doesn't necessarily reflect my enjoyment. There are other movies that I enjoyed, and I gave them lower ratings, because I think the movie could have been made better, and it had certain flaws, but, so that's why I've rated it a 6, out of 10 again. But ultimately, I had a good time at the movies. There, at the end, it's not too much of a reveal in a horror movie to say that at the end, there's a little twist that reveals that the bad guy could possibly still be alive, and then smash cuts to end credits, and when that happened, everyone in my theater started clapping, and I was like, damn straight you're going to clap. This is a 3D movie that you're seeing that we never get to see anymore. It's a 3D horror movie, which we haven't seen for 20 years, and you should clap at this, and this is fantastic. Also, there were kids in the audience, which I was like, this could not be a good thing, because, like, first of all, it was really gory, really violent, and there's a lot of sex in it, but I was like, alright.
It's very, very hard R-rated.
It's absolutely not for kids, but these kids were going nuts. It was like, yes, this is your first 3D movie, probably your first R movie. This is the perfect first movie for you. Anyway, I thought that as a popcorn film, it actually succeeded.
Yes, that's actually why I give it a 6 as well. It works in the way that it's 3D, as you just pretty much said. If it hadn't been in 3D, I probably would have given it a 4, to be honest with you. As a 3D movie, it's really cool, and I'd recommend seeing it just for that. Make sure your theater is showing it in 3D, though. It's advertised as My Bloody Valentine 3D, but not everyone's showing it in 3D. Only about 900 theaters in the country are.
If you look on Fandango or some of those sites, they actually distinguish. It'll say My Bloody Valentine, and then also My Bloody Valentine 3D as separate entries.
You know, Fandango should totally pay us for that little plug you just did.
I know. Because
they do a great job, those folks at Fandango.
I love paying extra for movie tickets.
Yes. you just ruined it for everyone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, so honestly, if you like horror movies, you really shouldn't miss this just by virtue of the fact that it's a unique horror movie experience, being that it's
3D. if you're one of those people who feels like you need to see the original before you see any sort of remake, or if you're one of those rare people that actually realizes that this is a remake, which is modern-day Hollywood audience really has no clue, which is why they get away with remaking so many of these, then there's no reason to track down the original, even though I will plug this though. Even though it was just released, Lionsgate just re-released the original in an uncut version for the first time ever officially. So that's kind of cool. I haven't actually seen the uncut version, but back in the day when the original came out, it was brought down by a lot of critics for being too violent, so it ended up with several different cuts before it was actually made in the theaters.
Right.
But this one totally just plays all that up. I mean, you can see how times have changed now, because this is like, I don't know, this is really pushing an R rating.
Oh yeah, it's a hard R
at some points. Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is that if you're at all interested in the Henry Selick movie Coraline, which I'm passingly interested in, there is a 3D version of the trailer in front of this movie.
Which was actually, the teaser for that was in front of Beowulf, which was forever ago.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Which is also in 3D. Speaking of that trailer really quick, I'll get into this. I'm really happy that trailer exists, mainly for the fact that it says, from the director of Nightmare Before Christmas, Henry Selick.
Henry Selick.
Yes, I like that it does that, because every emo kid in the theater is like, huh, what? It's not Tim Burton. Okay, right. So that's all I'd say about that.
Yeah, you're right. So if you're interested in that, and also right before that trailer shows up, there's an excellent standard 80s like disclaimer of you see a shot of the mine and just a big, in white, big impact font, put on your 3D glasses now, which I just loved seeing. I was like,
yeah.
And everybody in my audience went, ooh.
Yeah, that's right. And then whatever happens right after that, like this happened to me in Beowulf, you get the put on 3D glasses thing now, and then whatever 3D thing happens first, everyone's like, wow!
Yeah, it's totally true. But yeah, so it's worth seeing. Do you have any idea how, like, are they going to release this on DVD in 3D? Does that technology exist?
Yeah, they'll do the same thing they've done with Polar Express now and Journey to Center of the Earth 3D. And Spy Kids 3D, too. I forgot that one existed, actually. Where they release it on DVD, and you can watch it both ways. It comes with two pairs of glasses. But however, for those who know what's going on exactly, they're the blue, red 3D glasses, where the 3D is kind of crap. Plus, you have to realize that you're watching this at home on your little screen, where unless you have most people, I guess, now have flat-screen TVs. It looks cool on a flat-screen TV. But if you have the old round fronts, is what I'm going to call them, because I have no clue what the old ones are called now. Round fronts,
yeah, that's,
which is my nickname in high school.
That's what the tribal Indians used to call them, so that's probably accurate. CRTs would be even better.
If you have a round front TV, it doesn't look as cool. However, since we've kind of gotten more into the 3D thing now, I want to. Do you have a favorite 3D movie, Ryan?
That's an excellent question, Logan. I'm glad you asked. You know, I have a lot of movies that I've enjoyed that I know came out in 3D originally, but I have never had the opportunity to see them in 3D.
Yeah.
So I can't really say I do have a favorite 3D movie.
Well, I'm excited to say that my favorite 3D movie is about to be released for the first time ever on home video, or now home DVD, in 3D. And that is actually Friday the 13th Part 3D.
That came to mind, yeah.
Which is, that was always my favorite one. I mean, it's my favorite of the series only because, you know, they were all super cheesy, but only because that was the cheesiest. Mm-hmm. It also has my favorite 3D moment of all time, which I'll finally get to see in 3D, where this stoner kid's like, "Hey, man, take a hit of this," and he holds a joint up in 3D, yeah, right. And that to me is just that's when 3D went over the top. That's when okay, we gotta stop this 3D thing. I'll be now it's back, and so I'm sure at some point we'll get another over the top 3D moment, and then it'll disappear again for a while.
Yeah, a guy actually walked out in the middle of Friday the 13th 3, and actually comes out and says, "We gotta stop this 3D thing." That's how you
the
know
the joint went too far.
It's going overboard. We should mention that there's sort of a perhaps unintentional callback to Friday the 13th in My Bloody Valentine with the 3D eye pop.
Yes, that's right.
Which is happens in both movies. You know, the other, last thing I want to say about this movie is that you will get to see a cameo appearance by the most exquisite actor of his time.
I cheered.
I did too.
Glorious moment. I cried a little.
None other than Mr. Jared DiGiorgi, my cousin, portrays the nuanced character of Doc Miller.
Someone fact-check me on this and maybe get back to us, but I think the character is actually only in there as a reference to the original film.
Because that was one of the... What was it?
I think it was a writer or producer of the original.
Right, okay.
Had the last... I think it was Stephen Miller or something like that might have been involved. I probably should have looked into that before we record this.
Yeah, well.
But, I really think that's the only reason Dr. Miller is in this new remake, but it's a standout part. It's really good.
He's got a couple lines, and he says he talks to Jamie King. He gets a piece of chocolate from Jamie King. I mean, that's a great cameo.
And I like to point out he's introed before we even see him. You get over at the intercom system, you get a
paging
Dr.
Miller. Right.
I'm like, here comes Dr. Miller. So it's a pretty exciting moment.
You didn't even know my cousin when this was in this. You just loved anybody named Dr.
That's
Miller.
That's right.
But yeah, they shot in Pittsburgh. He's an actor in Pittsburgh, mostly does theater. But they apparently they shot some in Pittsburgh, and he was in it. So he's good. He's good in
it's,
it.
If you're a fan of Ryan from this podcast,
and you are,
which I know you are, Natalie, then you're gonna love Jared DiGiorgi and yes. My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Look for his promise ring in that scene.
Jeez. Well, that's all I got this week.
Yeah. So that's Critical End. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and just do a search.
Do
a search for Critical End, not you. Do a search for Critical End, and you'll find us. Also, keep up with us on the blog, critical-end.com. The blog will have a bunch of written stuff. We'll post little comments about movies, TV, movie news, and we'll often post movie reviews there that we don't get a chance to talk about on the podcast. I think my review for The Spirit is up there. Logan's review for The Day the Earth Still is up there, as well as probably a couple other things at this point.
And keep checking, because there's always new written reviews all the time.
Right. You can subscribe to the blog in your favorite RSS feeder, or in Firefox, or whatever you choose to do. Or just come to the website every day.
That's critical-end.com.
Critical-end.com it is. Well, that closes out episode 2. Anything else you want to say to the fine folks out there, Logan?
A fine episode overall, I think.
Indeed. Indubitably.
Oh, I'm going home now.
All right, I'm going home now too, and I'm Ryan.
And I'm Logan.
Critical End. Goodbye.
Bye.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.